Why is the ACLU of North Carolina considering potential litigation for House Bill 2?
We definitely think that this was legislation that was born out of animus towards certain parts of our community. We think it's plain that this arose out of attempts by Charlotte to provide protection to lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender individuals in public accommodations, prevent them from being harassed or discriminated against. The fact that the legislation sort of arose out of that is telling. It sort of promotes discrimination, and we also think that it likely violates Title IX and possibly several other federal laws.
Several opponents, and I'm guessing the ACLU, have sort of made the comment that this is one of the most extreme anti-LGBT measures that the country has seen. Can you tell me why that is?
One of the elements that makes it sort of more extreme than what we've seen is that they've packaged this preemption law with provisions to prevent students and others from using the appropriate bathroom that corresponds with their gender identity in schools and government buildings. And they've also put together other preemption issues, eliminated some of the ability of people to litigate over wrongful terminations as well.
As you know, the legislature does have authority to regulate cities and towns. And so why are they in the wrong here if they are entitled to do that?
What we saw here was a locality operating within its authority to pass an ordinance that protected their entire community. They did have the authority to do this. They were within their rights. And after passing a duly considered, you know, well-considered and thoughtful piece of legislation, the legislature, because they disagreed with the locality and what this local government wanted to do in their own community, they came in and they actually revoked power that this locality had. And they made it not just about revoking that particular locality's power, but they preemptively struck at all other localities that might be considering passing this kind of legislation or this kind of ordinance.
In your opinion or in the ACLU's opinion, do they not have the power to do that?
Back in the mid-90s, there's a Supreme Court decision that's comparable to this in which a state decided that they were going to revoke the power of localities to pass protective ordinances. And the Supreme Court found that since it was born out of animus, again, it was very similar. It was targeting the LGBT community. They found that at the end of the day, this was promoting discrimination and that the state could not do that. They could not revoke that kind of power. I believe it was under equal protection. At that time, that was a constitutional amendment in the state of Colorado. This is obviously legislative action rather than a constitutional amendment, but I think it's a very similar scenario where you have the legislature revoking power from local governments based on animus towards lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender individuals. And because of that, there's, I think, some pretty serious constitutionality concerns here.
Now, you talked about how the legislature sort of went beyond Charlotte's ordinance and preemptively prevented other cities and towns from doing similar things. But they also sort of struck at the heart of some of the anti-discrimination measures that towns have already passed, like in Asheville and other places that had protections for LGBT people. Can you talk a little bit about that? And is it clear as to whether or not those measures still stand, or are they just gone now due to the legislature's actions?
So any of those local ordinances have now been preempted. They no longer stand. And I think that that is part of why we view this as pretty sweeping and extreme, right? Because the way that they drafted this is that anything, even legislation, for example, or ordinances, local ordinances that would have protected based on familial status or veteran status, which we understand that some local governments in Orange County have passed things protecting based on family status and veteran status, that those would be wiped out too by this legislation.
Veteran status? Like, can you tell me, what does that mean? So they have protections?
Yeah, so in some local governments made the decision that they wanted to protect veterans, people who'd served in the military and come out of that experience, they served their country, and for whatever reason, there was concern in some of these local governments that that veterans might be discriminated against based on that status, based on the fact that they were former military. And they wanted to prevent that kind of discrimination, so they included that as one of the categories that they protected in the local non-discrimination ordinances that they passed. And because this new law actually preempts all local non-discrimination ordinances, all of those would be preempted.
You mentioned this phrase a few times, born of animus, which I'm guessing is probably pretty important terminology when you're getting into legal matters. And that seems like it would be a hard thing to prove. Now, I know that the backers of this bill were talking about public safety. They were mentioning the safety of women and children in bathrooms. How do you prove that that's not the full intentions of this law and that there was actual animus towards the LGBT community?
Well, I think one thing that shows that is that, for one thing, they went really well out of their way to make sure that they excluded gender identity and sexual orientation as any of the protected classes in the areas that they were willing to protect. So, for example, in the employment sections they dealt with, or in the state non-discrimination law that they essentially created with this bill, they left out both sexual orientation and gender identity. And I think the other thing that tends to demonstrate that it's targeting of particular communities, besides the fact that they repeatedly refuse to recognize that a transgender woman is a woman that should use the woman's room and that a transgender man is a man who should use the men's room, they also basically refuse to take up amendments to try and add gender identity and sexual orientation. And they went well beyond the so-called safety issue and addressing the so-called safety issue that they talked about when they proposed this much more sweeping legislation.
You mentioned Title IX funding also. Why would Title IX funding be in jeopardy?
That's a great question, and it had some discussion at the legislature, and I don't think that the proponents of the bill ever really completely understood what was being said. The reality is that the U.S. Department of Education Office of Civil Rights determined that under Title IX, when a school provides separate restrooms or locker rooms for boys and girls, it must provide equal access to transgender students to those facilities consistent with their gender identity. So that means that a transgender girl or young lady would be able to use the women's room, and a transgender boy or young man would be able to use the men's room. And the U.S. Department of Education has been very clear that if you don't make that available to transgender students, that you are violating Title IX. And they've actually already, you know, they've achieved a settlement in Illinois under this, where an Illinois school district very nearly lost their Title IX funding because they would not comply. So I think that the department has made it very clear, and the fact that the bill sponsors, you know, were willing to jeopardize over $4 billion in order to pass this law because they don't want to accommodate transgender students is just another example of how extreme they were being.
And what ended up happening in Illinois?
In Illinois, the school district ended up accommodating transgender students and making sure that they could use locker rooms and restrooms consistent with their gender identity.